Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Beginner's Mind podcast. And we bring you inspiring conversations here in this podcast with thought leaders and experts from across the globe. I am thrilled to share with you that our podcast is now listened to by people in 107 countries, thanks to all of you guys. And it was ranked in the top 1% most shared by Spotify in 2022. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for spreading the word. Today, we have an exciting guest with us, Mr. Sean Wells, who is one of the world's leading nutrition experts. So we've had a lot of questions from all of you about how can I have more energy and how can I get more done out of my day? Of course, managing your time is one, but managing your energy is another one. We just have the right person for that today, Mr. Sean Wells, a.k.a. the Ingredientologist. And let me read out his introduction before we welcome him in the show. His latest book, The Energy Formula, Six Life-Changing Ingredients to Unleash Your Limitless Potential, which we'll talk about today, was mentioned by the Forbes magazine in their 21 books to read in 2021. The Energy Formula covers, apart from other things, keto, paleo, biohacking, stoicism, supplements, nootropics, sleep hacks, infrared saunas and cold showers, and all of the things I'm sure you might have experimented with at some stage, but today we hope to take a deep dive into that. Sean has formulated over 1,000 supplements, food, beverages, and cosmeceuticals, and patented 25 novel ingredients, and is now known as the Ingredientologist across the world. He's in China currently, and he's also formerly been a chief clinical dietitian with over a decade of clinical experience. So we have someone with us who's a subject matter expert and who has been appreciated for his work across the world in all five continents, and was personally undergone through a journey where he has overcome many health issues himself. So get ready to take a deep dive into a wealth of wisdom and inspiration today. Mr. Sean Wells, you're welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'd just like to take a moment and appreciate your team, which has been very, very helpful in arranging this conversation. We were scheduled to speak last year, I believe, but due to events out of our control, the dates kept moving here and there, but you have an awesome team in place, and kudos to them to make this possible. And thank you for joining us today, all the way from China.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be on.
Well, pleasure to have you. And we've seen your videos on the Mind Valley platform and other several videos. And I'm sure a lot of people who tune in will have a lot of questions about what kind of food they should be eating, health, maintenance activities, and what things work for home and saunas and cold showers and the myths around them. But let's begin with your journey first. How did you get into this? Were you always interested in the effects of food on the human body? Or where did this start? And talk to us a little bit about your journey, please.
I wasn't always into this. There was a time that I was very sick. I grew up bullied, abused, really difficult upbringing, and I became very sick mentally, physically, extremely overweight, self-soothing with junk food. I hit about 150 kilos, and so I was very overweight, very sick, and I was very much bullied and pretty much suicidal. And at that point, I was still doing well in school, and I was at the top business specialty school in the country in the United States, called the Babson College.
Mm-hmm.
And
MIT, right?
And so, I decided to start working out. I was reading all the magazines and the books, and I started transforming my body, feeling very different. And I ended up going to the doctor, and he saw the transformation in my health and my physique, and he was shocked. And I was telling him how I loved being at GNC, how I you know, love these magazines and all these articles on these supplements and the power of them. And I was expecting him, this is, you know, over 20 years ago now, like as a doctor, to say, you know, that stuff is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he drew out a lifeline for me that was 20 at the time, and he drew it out to 80, and he said, why not be happy between here and here?
Mm.
And this man gave me this permission that I just never expected. And I was thrilled to go chase my dream. At the time, there wasn't a Tony Robbins or an Oprah Winfrey or even an Instagram or, you know, influencers that were just, you know, living those kinds of lives. I was told to go to business school, finish business school, go out and work for a Anderson or, you know, one of these kinds of consulting firms and, you know, have that kind of life. And eventually you'll get a house and eventually you'll get a BMW and then you die. So that's what I was thinking my life was going to be. And this doctor gave me the opportunity to pursue my dreams as an authority figure. It totally changed my life path. So absolutely, that's where the passion started. And I really wanted, my dream was to literally be a supplement formulator. And fast forward all these years, I am now considered the top supplement formulator in the world.
You are indeed.
And I really achieved my dream. Like it was a very niche dream, but I want to be clear that like people really can achieve their dreams, one, but two, the power of words and the effect on people.
Mm-hmm.
If this doctor had not stepped outside of his role of being a doctor and listened to me and given me that advice, I would not be sitting before you on this podcast. I wouldn't have this book. I wouldn't be on TVs and on stages and have patented all these ingredients. I would be working at Anderson Consulting, and I would be, you know, just living my life in doldrums.
Well, we are so glad that you're not, and we are so glad that you're doing what you're doing. And your story just emphasizes the point that all you need is that one person who believes in you and who makes that little extra effort to help reignite that self-belief within yourself as well. There might be a lot of people out there, Sean, who might feel stuck in their current physical situation, and they might have tried or experimented with a lot of things and probably at some stage given up or accepted it as part of their genetic, you know, destiny or something. But however, your story makes it very clear that if we put our mind to it and find the right resources, find the right people, you know, turnarounds in physical conditions are possible. What would you like to, as we begin this conversation, what would you like to say to people who might have sort of accepted their health condition as a genetic destiny to start that turnaround?
Yeah, well, I will say there's actually a part two to that story where I was getting my master's degree in nutrition and biochemistry, and I was working 80 to 100 hours a week.
Okay.
And grinding on my body, and I ended up getting Epstein-Barr virus, Hashimoto's, and chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and I was literally in bed for about 6 months, and then that's when I started really digging into a different type of supplements and diet. I started looking at keto, at paleo, at immune supplements, and not just sports nutrition supplements anymore.
Right.
So I have been through it.
And,
I was close to death. Like I never thought I would actually be able to get out of bed.
Mm.
And I worked my way out of that. So I do know what it's like to be obese.
Sure.
I also was anorexic. I went from 150 kilos to about 70 kilos. So I have had massive body swings and that's related to the mind and that's work that I've been doing my entire life. And, psychedelics has actually been a huge pivotal shift for me with that.
Okay.
So I know what it's like to to certainly have body dysmorphia, to have autoimmune issues, to have disordered eating. So absolutely, you know, we can get into that and talk through whatever your audience would love to hear.
No, sure. You mentioned autoimmune, and that's sort of a condition where your immune system turns against you, right? And in Hashimoto's, it's actually results in hypothyroidism, which is, am I correct there? It results in hypothyroidism, yeah. Right? And that's very prevalent in especially in the Indian subcontinent now, especially with the new generation. I don't know, it has something to do with the diet or things like that. Speak to us a little bit about, if you will, please, about when you initiated your turnaround and, you know, to really get back on your feet, to your journey. Were there, apart from lifestyle changes, and let's talk a little bit about both, about lifestyle changes and dietary changes, what were sort of the first steps, if you could break it down, for somebody who might find themselves stuck in their physical situation right now? What were the first one or two, three steps you would suggest, both in terms of lifestyle and diet?
Number one, this is at the core, and it's taken me my entire life to get there, is if you hate your body, you believe that your body is betraying you, then you will never get well.
Wow.
I was biohacking. I had learned the biohacks, like, between that time when I talked to the doctor and when I, you know, got very sick pursuing my master's. I was doing all these biohacks, but I was doing biohacks to survive all the things I was doing to myself mentally, if that makes sense. I was never optimized. I was trying to survive the grind I was putting myself through.
Right.
So I could get a little bit more, so I could be even harder on myself. I could perform even higher. And this is the problem. So the number one thing that we have to do is change our mindset to where we're thankful to our body. My body survived so many things that I did to it that I am so thankful for its resilience, for its beauty now, that it could handle all those things that I put it through. You know, it's going to sound more esoteric when I talk about this, but these things are important, that you surround yourself with the right people. That's one of the aspects of the energy formula, is the why in your tribe. Who are you putting around you? What are the thoughts that you're thinking? If anyone talked to you like you talk to you, you wouldn't be their friend. So this is at the core. This is at the foundation before I start telling you about exercise, before I tell you about the biohacks, before I tell you about the supplements and diet.
Right.
These things are core. Do you feel safe in your environment? If you don't feel safe, you will never get out of the sympathetic nervous system.
Right.
You will, or you'll always be in sympathetic. You'll always be in fight or flight.
Right.
Your body will never relax. It will never heal. So, you know, these are core things that I would say are first to address.
Very profound.
But absolutely. You know, moving into things like diet, the number one diet we can all agree on, you probably hear about the health of carnivore, and then you hear about the health of vegan, and you hear about keto, and you hear about all these different diets, and all of them, how powerful they are. And yes, there's benefits to all of them in certain scenarios. The one thing we should all agree on, that all of them really have the common thread of, should be whole food. Whole food is most important, whether you are doing a plant-based diet or you are doing a pure animal diet, you know, depending on your kind of where you're at ethically on that spectrum. But what's most core is that we're eating whole food. What's changed in the last 100 years is not whether it's plant-based or animal-based. There's cultures that have done either for thousands of years. There's animals that have done either for millions of years, and all healthy. What has changed is ultra processed food. And we have these trans fats, we have inflammatory seed oils, we have maltodextrin, we have high glycemic carbohydrate, we have engineered foods that are engineered
to initiate what's called the bliss point, literally to give you a foodgasm.
Okay.
And give you serotonin and dopamine by things being sweet, salty, fatty, crispy, gooey. And you think about some of these foods now, they're not just one. In nature, one of those things might occur.
Mm.
But now our foods are all of those things.
Combined together.
You're addicted to it. Mm-hmm. You're addicted to it. They literally, you know, make these air-like potato chips that you don't get full on, that have the salty, the sweet, the crunchy, the oily, and you just, what it literally says on the
reach can, out for more.
You can't eat just one. Right? And they have sodas. They have sodas that are sweet on the front and have acid in the front and have nothing, like a blandness in the back. Why do they do that? So that when you drink it, you love the taste at the beginning, but then you're left with like a longing at the end. And so what do? You keep sipping it. Keep sipping it. And I'm sure you've seen many people pick up the bottle, drink it, put it back down, put the lid on. Pick up the bottle, drink it, put it back down, put the lid on. And it's like they don't even realize what an addiction it is.
Gosh.
These foods are engineered. You need to get off that train and eat whole food.
Mm.
And that's going to be one of the most profound things that you can do.
Oh, those are great inputs there. And yeah, I've observed that too. People reaching out for a bottle of soda or something and then keeping back again. And just like that, we pick up our mobile phones out of habit, you pick it up again. Because it's designed to be that way. It's designed to be that way, people. There's probably billions of dollars in R&D to figure out the sweet spot, as you mentioned, what it is. And so we have to be careful. I just like to dwell a little bit on what you said about the mindset part, because that was very profound. You started by saying, by accepting and loving your body and honoring your body. I heard Tony Robbins speak about this once. He said, once you taste the taste of good health and well-being, and you will realize that nothing else comes close to that. Anything else that you crave for, but once you taste good health and vitality, you will figure out that everything pales in comparison to that. And so it's about getting it, honoring your body, your system, and who you are, and taking care of it, worshiping it as your temple. The second thing about your environment that you mentioned, are you feeling safe in your current environment or not? And you mentioned that could be a trigger for the body remaining in the fight or flight mode. And some of us, we create environments like that for ourselves, you know, those hype, right? In the pursuit of appearing the high performer, we create an environment where we are deliberately infusing that stress. And that may look good in the movies, right? The guy that you're trying to emulate. But when you play it out in real life and you are the lab rat for that experiment, you pay a heavy price because your body's constantly in the fight or flight mode, as Sean just said. Those are very important points there, out people, you know, as far as the mind is concerned.
Such a great point. I used to worship that whole, like, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, Gary Vee, all these guys that say, you know, it's about the hustle and the grind. And what is hustle? Hustle is sympathetic. And we need to be in sympathetic sometimes. This is like that yin and yang, right? We need to get motivated sometimes. It's the grind part that concerns me, that ultra sympathetic. And basically, hustle and grind means there's no relax. There's no downtime. There's no healing. There is no parasympathetic. You have two modes, sympathetic, ultra sympathetic.
Okay.
And what is grind? Think about that word in physics of like the heat, the smoke, the pieces breaking. That's your body breaking down, that you are doing something that you hate, and you are heads down pushing through something that's miserable to get to some point that you don't even know what that point is. You don't even know what your goal is, and you're sacrificing. And life should be about a lot of sacrifice and grinding and being heads down. Why? Because when you're heads up, you can see the things that are all around you, the incredible relationships that are around you, the incredible blessings and gifts that are around you, and you can manifest these things. The right place, right person, the right opportunity is around you all the time. We're just too distracted to know it.
Right. Right. We're always running after the next thing and the next thing. Just like a lab rat on a constant treadmill. It's going to die of exhaustion and wouldn't step off. And the same way, we get caught up. So always good to take a break, always good to take a step back and reevaluate, because sometimes we dig in so deep in this hole that we find ourselves in when we start digging deeper, and that's never a good strategy. Taking a step back, asking for help, seeking out professional help, those are good things to do. You mentioned sleep, and I think that's one of the next things I want to talk about now. We have a lot of issues, and again, talking about influencers, there's all sort of mixed wisdom out there, quote unquote, about sleep. Oh, that person, the high performer, the political leader that I look up to, he gets by with only 3 hours. That film star, he has 2 packs of cigarettes every day, he drinks 10 espressos and gets by on 4 hours every day. Why the hell am I spending 8 hours in bed? I'm wasting 4 hours of my life. I should be out there hustling. So talk to us about the optimum sleep cycle, please, and the sort of food supplements or a lifestyle that will help. What's the ideal? That's the first question, and then we'll move on to the second one.
The ideal is certainly more than 7 hours. It's anywhere from 7 to 9 hours is what we see in the research. When you get to sub 7 hours, in some research, it's 6.5. But when you get in that range, we start seeing that you become acutely insulin resistant in your neurons, your brain cells.
Okay.
And your neurons literally get into this state of diabetes, essentially. And you are resistant to taking up the glucose, the energy that your neurons need. So what do you do when you wake up tired? Mm-hmm. You want to reach for caffeine. You want to reach for sugar. Mm-hmm. You have addictive decision fatigue choices that aren't necessarily healthy for you that you might do.
Right.
You also might seek out like dopamine kind of behaviors, like driving fast in the car, or you know, eating those high bliss point foods and having energy drinks and you know, all these kinds of things that could be destructive behaviors, so that you can get energy because your brain is tired. And when you're acutely insulin resistant, guess what? If you do this chronically, you become chronically insulin resistant. And that's why your risk for type 2 diabetes goes up 5 times when you're chronically underslept, when you're sleeping under 7 hours a day. Your risk for heart attack goes up 3x. Mm-hmm. So these things are very serious. And by the way, Alzheimer's is the same condition where you're resistant to glucose being taken up in your brain cells. It's called type 3 diabetes.
Oh,
you can look that up. Alzheimer's is type 3 diabetes. So, you know, this is where getting sleep is so critical. And not only is it critical there, one of the other things that happens when we're sleeping is something called autophagy, where our cells are getting detoxed, like a little vacuum cleaner is going through them at night. Where things are getting stored, things are getting healed, things are getting fixed, growth factors are up, the brain can heal with things like these proteins called nerve growth factor, BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which keeps your brain young and neuroplastic.
Uh-huh.
And this is really critical. So our brain, if we're not getting enough sleep, is aging faster. And we are increasing the amount of inflammation around our brain. And that's why you're not all taking, not only not getting enough glucose into the brain as fuel, and therefore not making enough ATP, but you're also getting this inflammation, this neuroinflammation around the brain. And that's making you feel slow and foggy and tired.
Right.
And so these things are real. Do you want your brain to be like that of a 20-year-old or a 50-year-old? I mean, that's the side of this Gary V and these people don't tell you about.
Right, right.
You don't get something for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to take the time to take care of your body. As you said, your body is your temple. So take care of it and treat it as such.
Right. And I think the important part here is to understand that people who might be glorifying this, might not even be aware of the actual impact of it themselves, and they might realize when it's too late, and you're blindly following that or glorifying it. So 7 to 9 hours, ideal, as Sean just said. Don't compromise on your sleep. It's not worth it. Plus, you're miserable to be around. You're irritable, short-tempered, and you're prone to road rage and all other sort of things that you are going to regret later on, people. So get your 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Thank you there, Sean. You mentioned caffeine, and I love coffee, I'll admit it. I love my one or two cups in a day. I usually have the one in the French press in the morning, which is about 2 big teaspoons in the morning, and then probably a shot of espresso somewhere, 3:30 p.m. And that's the ideal, around about 2 shots of coffee a day. What's the science behind caffeine? Let's talk about in the form that we consume it. It's popularly consumed as coffee, and then I know you've discovered something, a new ingredient, which I was reading about. It's not yet available in India, I think, but I was trying to get it from the US via Amazon. But I've heard very good things about it in terms of it does not result in some of the side effects that caffeine has on us. So talk to us about both these things, please.
100%. So caffeine is a molecule called 1,3,7-trimethylxanthine. And it occurs, like you said, not only in coffee and tea and cocoa and some of these kinds of things. It's actually in nature to repel insects. That's why it's okay. In these plants. It actually has toxicity associated with it. And okay. Two of its metabolites are fairly toxic as well, theobromine and theophylline. Theophylline is a bronchodilator that has a lot of toxicity and side effects. And theobromine is that thing that's in chocolate that can kill your cat or dog if they eat it. Mm. But there's one metabolite, paraxanthine, that actually, when caffeine converts to it, the toxicity is removed, and that's the thing that has all the benefits. But to back up here, about 60% of us have what's known as slow metabolism of caffeine, and the gene associated with it, CYP1A2. So we have trouble metabolizing caffeine and turning it into paraxanthine. Mm-hmm. So while 70% of caffeine converts to paraxanthine, the question is, how long does it take?
Right.
And the bioindividuality, meaning how differently we metabolize caffeine, is massive. Mm-hmm. Some people have a half-life of 1.5 hours for caffeine. Some people, it's 10.5 hours. Mm-hmm. So there's people, like, you know, that I can have a cup of coffee and go straight to bed. Those are the fast metabolizers.
I
get very little benefit, but they don't have the side effects.
Okay.
The people that are 10.5 hours, 3 days later, they still have caffeine in their system from having that cup of coffee.
That's me.
And they all the side effects and
right.
Very little benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a small portion of the population that ideally deals with caffeine and converts it well, and they get the benefits with minimal side effects. But I'd say that's probably about 15% of the population.
Okay.
So when we all talk about caffeine, we're all experiencing it very differently.
Mm-hmm.
But more than 60% of the population is getting a lot of side effects.
Right.
And so it's leading to improper sleep. It's leading to anxiety and CNS, meaning the central nervous system, overstimulation, agitation, mm-hmm. these things like and certainly, like you said, when you're not getting sleep, it's affecting you on every level,
right.
Aging, performing, you know, you're not healing. Again, you're putting yourself at risk for almost all of these disease states, the diabetes, the Parkinson's, the Alzheimer's, heart attack, stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we see. And what's been confusing about the research from caffeine for years is that some studies would show it increases the risk of heart attack and stroke and diabetes. And then some studies say it doesn't.
Right.
Well, that's because these populations they were using were very different. And if we actually look at their epigenetic expression, then we can see actually what the case is. So what I've done is came out with and patented paraxanthine, that metabolite and I'm avoiding caffeine, and I'm avoiding theobromine and theophylline, and just giving you that pure active that gives you the energy mm-hmm. without the toxicity.
Great.
What's amazing, and we didn't expect, is that, yes, we expected the wakefulness and the energy it's, that comes from adenosine inhibition, you know, similar to what we've always heard about caffeine. What we didn't know mm-hmm. is how healing to the brain it was.
Oh, wow.
Not only is it not toxic, but it's increasing that BDNF protein that I was talking about for neuroplasticity, keeping uh-huh. the brain younger and helping you learn more. Okay. It's increasing nitric oxide to the brain via PDE9 inhibition, so more blood flow to the brain. It's increasing glutathione and catalase, these key antioxidants, and reducing oxidative stress. It's increasing dopamine and serotonin, these feel-good neurotransmitters that protect the brain as well. So now what we're seeing is we're 14 studies in, and every single study shows that it outperforms caffeine in every way. Focus, energy, it doesn't have the habitualization or adaptation effects of caffeine, meaning you don't become physiologically addicted to it.
Right.
You don't have to take more and more and more for it to keep working.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't have that toxicity, you don't have the negative impact on sleep. So we're getting people that can get a great workout in the evening and still go to bed.
Right.
So this is really exciting.
Nice.
I'm super excited about
it. No, it probably might just be the best, one of the biggest breakthroughs for this year in terms of, you know, supplements and accelerating human performance. And when will we get to see it in India?
We're working on that right
okay.
now. MuscleTech, Iovate is the company uh-huh. that had the exclusivity on it for the first year. And
okay.
And we've been working with them on bringing it into the Indian market. We're also working on EU, Australia, Canada, going global with this thing. So
I'm sure it's going to be everywhere in energy drinks. And yeah, we do get MuscleTech here. We get their whey proteins and all the other supplements. So but I'm sure that this might just be on the way as well. And when it is, we'll let you know in the comments section where to get it from as and when it becomes available. We will share with our audience as well. That'll be something exciting because, you know, if it's a plant-based thing, and I love your research, by the way, Sean, the amount of attention to detail, right down to knowing what gene it is that is working to digest it, do everything. Wow, hats off to that amount of detailed knowledge there. So, and for bringing these things out and for doing what you're doing, the amazing work that you're doing. And we cannot talk about caffeine and not talk about wine because I read somewhere, God, give me enough caffeine to change the things that I can change and enough wine to deal with things that I cannot change. what's your take on moderate alcohol consumption in terms of brain and body fitness, especially with these fads around red wine is good for the heart and et cetera, or your one drink a day doesn't hurt you? And so what's your research on that, Sean?
Yeah, this is another one where there's a lot of bioindividuality and the amount of what's called ethanol dehydrogenase enzyme that we make varies highly, especially in populations. You know, if you look at the Asian populations, when they drink, they often get like that redness in the face. And that's from the aldehyde, the toxic side effect of alcohol. Okay. Being elevated and then not being able to process that alcohol very well.
Okay.
And, you know, and then there's certain populations that can deal with it better, but obviously there's just variance person to person. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I would say here that's often not taken into account in the study, I've spent time in blue zones like Sardinia, Italy.
Okay.
And they have red wine at every table. And of course, there's been a polyphenol that's been talked about a lot with these blue zone cultures, resveratrol, right? That's in red wine.
So sorry, when you say blue zone, does it have something to do with longevity?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, it's where people tend to be super centenarians. There's like six places in the world where they exceed 100 years. And then it's been studied why in these cultures, what's happening.
Right.
One of the biggest things is that they have that support network that we were talking about at the beginning. Uh-huh. They have a culture that supports them. They also, like we talked about, are mm-hmm. anti-grind. They slow down.
Right.
They have 3-hour meals.
Gosh.
Does that seem crazy to people?
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a dinner where they sit there and they talk and they enjoy the food and they made the food themselves and that wow. food is high quality. But they're experiencing the food. They're experiencing the support. They're mm-hmm. opening up about their lives.
Right.
And so when they have wine, there's something psychologically that's called a psychosomatic anchor.
Okay.
And that psychosomatic anchor means that you connect that psychologically, whatever the behavior is, with that feeling, in this case, of safety, of connection.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I drink red wine and I'm sipping it over
right.
the course of this meal, I'm mm-hmm. connecting that with safety and connection.
Right.
Think about, let's say, an American drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Going out to the bar and there's loud music and mm. there's the fear of rejection.
Right.
And there's people pushing up on you and there's people screaming and there's cigarette smoke and
mm-hmm.
and I'm just trying to pound this alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm drinking only when I'm sad.
Right.
Or I'm drinking when I'm
or lonely.
Mm-hmm. Or lonely. So
right.
think about those psychosomatic anchors. Now
mm.
every time you drink that alcohol, it's putting you into that state.
Right.
So to try and tease that out of the data is very difficult.
Right.
So to me, alcohol can be experienced very differently. Like, is it sipped or is it pounded? Is it
right.
a safe environment, a loving environment
mm-hmm.
Versus something that isn't?
Mm-hmm.
And so the people drinking it in Sardinia, Italy, it's not to get wasted or drunk. It's to enjoy the experience, and it enhances the flavor of the food, and it reminds them of the love that they have around them.
Wow. Isn't that a beautiful thing?
That needs to be like teased out of this research. So the research shows that 1 to 2 drinks a day could potentially have health benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol itself, ethanol, is a vasodilator. Does it have some toxicity associated with it? Potentially the aldehyde, like I was talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But there is a certain point, obviously when it's at a low amount, like you're not pounding it, it's sipped, it's one drink, it's not going to have a negative effect. It actually is what's called a hormetic effect, a hormetic stress.
Okay.
So a little stressed is actually a positive thing to the body.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when you go work out or when you do fasting or you
sure.
know some of these things like the sauna or the ice plunge.
Uh-huh.
All of those things can be a hormetic stress where it
right.
actually gets your body to adapt and grow stronger.
Uh-huh.
But there is a point where something is a eustress, meaning EU, meaning a positive stress, and it tips past that Goldilocks point, if you're thinking of the bell curve
mm-hmm.
and the Goldilocks in the very middle, and it tips into distress. And this is
okay.
when there's just too much stress.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you've had your 2 or 3 drinks, and that's when you're, you know, sad and angry, and that's when you're feeling lonely, and that's when you're pounding it, and, you know, all of these things, it changes the whole scenario.
Right. So it has a lot to do with the environment, the people that you're with, and it enhances your, you know, existing state of mind. So let's say if you're feeling good and in a mood for celebration, you're surrounded by good people, it's probably the social lubricant you need to open up and connect a little bit more. But on the other side, if you're feeling angry and alcohol is your escape, and that's when it's dangerous. So I think you made the point very clear, and then moderation, of course, and the environment plays a huge role in enhancing that. Mindfulness, obviously, what you talked about in Italy and other parts of the world, is the mindfulness of consumption, you know, the mindless eating. Buffets, for example. I've seen the shredded buffets. In fact, I was the general manager for a buffet restaurant in the UK, and eat all you can, £15. And that was like a madhouse at times. It could be, so people would come with this intention, oh, you know, I want to make the very best of the opportunity that I have there with eat all that I can. And they end up mixing everything, all different kinds of foods and all different kinds of substances, not going in any particular sequence. And that's also mindless consumption. It's not, so your stomach's not sure at the end of the day, what kind of meal did I have, an Indian meal today, or was it Mexican, was it Chinese, or was it all mixed up? So mindfulness is the key there. Great, this has been a wonderful conversation so far. Since a lot of our audience are youngsters, we cannot skip not talking about whey protein or body bulk gaining supplements, which is a huge fad among youngsters, you know, who work out and who would like to get bulked up. What is the science on that? What's the are they good, bad, or the ideal amounts? And, you know, especially in the age category of 18 to 27, you know, people who go for it, they're highly recommended by trainers at the gym. Whey protein is definitely like a staple thing, and then supplemented by pre-workout things, and then creatine, for example. What's your take on those supplements, bodybuilding supplements?
Right. So whey protein, the reason it's been the gold standard, if you will, for so long is that it's high in BCAAs, branched chain amino acids, which are anti-catabolic, means protecting muscle. But it's highest of all the proteins in the most key BCAA, leucine. And leucine is the trigger for muscle protein synthesis. And that means growing and maintaining that lean body mass tissue, the muscle that we so desire. And by the way, it's not just bodybuilders that should care about this. It's all of us.
Okay.
Because the most key thing associated with longevity is the muscle we have and our ability to use it.
Okay.
Is strength. One of the best indicators of where you're at in terms of biological aging is grip strength. And you can tell how well someone is aging by grip strength.
Right.
And frailty is kind of the opposite of that, sarcopenia, where you're losing that muscle and people will fall and break a hip and go into the nursing home or hospital. And 2, 3, 4 weeks later, they can be dead. The outcomes are very poor from coming back from these hip fractures.
Right.
So, you know, that's one thing to say there is, like, not only is this about bodybuilders, it's about all of us. Now, whey protein is a dairy protein, and some people may have intolerances to it. They may get, you know, phlegmy. They may have inflammation in the gut. You know, so that's something aware of. We all don't deal with it well. And, of course, some people are just vegans.
Right.
The problem with vegan protein is that it has about half the level of leucine in it. So the problem there that we've seen in the studies, to make a vegan protein perform as well as a whey protein, we need to either take twice as much. And in the study, you had to take 50 grams of the vegan protein instead of 25 so that you could get that same level of leucine, or supplement the vegan protein with additional leucine. So you could add some BCAAs or add some pure leucine to it to supercharge that vegan protein. And then you've got something that is closer to that whey protein without having to use whey.
If I'm okay with having the dairy-based one, are there still things I should be keeping in consideration? How much and at what time? And
right. So about 25 grams... maybe to anywhere from 25 to 30 is actually enough. You know, some of these gainers that are, you know, 30 to 50, you don't need to do that. About 25 to 30 is enough to maximize muscle protein synthesis and give yourself enough amino acids. The best time is around the workout.
Okay.
You know, most people think it's immediately post-workout, and that's fine.
Okay.
But as long as it's sometime pre, intra, post workout, you're fine. There's an anabolic window there that you're kind of prime. So making sure that you're getting it in that window. So if you're one of those people that just loves post workout, immediately hit a whey protein shake, great. And the faster you actually drink it, the faster you consume it, it's actually better because it's not really about the absolute level of leucine. Mm-hmm. It's about how quickly leucine spikes in the plasma.
I see.
Really, the faster you can drink that whey protein shake, the better.
Okay, that's interesting. Thank you for sharing that. We've been 45 minutes into this very interesting conversation. We've talked about a lot of the things which are current and trending, and people follow it, and busted a lot of myths. So thank you, Sean, for the time. I'm mindful of the time that we have available. But before we let you go, there's a huge talk about resilience, building resilience and immunity in the post-COVID world. We don't know what the next virus is going to be. You know, hopefully there's no virus. Hopefully there's just AI should be the only thing we should all be worried about and not viruses. You know, there's a whole talk about building resilience, physical, mental, emotional resilience, especially in our youngsters, the generation who has gone through this and now will face the challenges of a world that is going to be, there's going to be a whole lot of automation, and God knows what's going to happen with the how the job scene is going to change, and people are going to go through a lot of uncertainty, a lot of stress. What are your top tips in building physical, emotional, mental resilience, if we speak of it?
Well, one is going to be, you know, reading the book and on the energy formula. Mm-hmm. That's actually at the core. This book was written around the idea of resilience because I think the idea of kind of like how you're talking about caffeination and grinding and all these things. Mm-hmm. Those are about trying to get very short-term gains. Mm-hmm. And what we see, if we live a life of balance, of kind of that idea of yin and yang, mm-hmm. or the idea of achieving parasympathetic and sympathetic where we're relaxed, mm-hmm. but we're stimulated, we're in that flow state. Mm-hmm. In that flow state is where we find that Goldilocks zone, like I was talking about, in between... Mm-hmm. Eustress and distress is that Goldilocks zone. That's the ultimate place to be, is in the center. And that's where we find we're most mentally and physically resilient. So it's finding the right amount of challenge and stress.
Right.
But it's also finding the right amount of relaxation and self-care.
Uh-huh.
It's having the self-love.
Right.
But also having enough of knowing how to push yourself. I spent time in Peru, and they have these animals that they talk about that you can take on different energies of.
Okay.
And there's the idea of puma energy, and it's a masculine energy to sometimes go chase something and go get it, right? And a lot of us entrepreneurs are in the wounded puma, where we're going and getting it, but we're hurt, we've been cut, we're bleeding along the way. And we don't know how to stop and heal. There's also the snake energy, and that's a grounded energy, and the snake sheds its skin, and it knows how to transform.
Wow.
And I think of this, now I'm thinking of that yin and yang, right? And the snake is kind of that line in the middle.
Right.
And then the condor energy is that feminine, healing, big picture, flying above it all kind of energy.
Right.
And the thing to know here is to be healthy, we all need to be in touch with our masculine, our feminine, and the ability to shift in between easily, depending on what the situation calls for in our life. Mm-hmm. This isn't about being a man or woman or gender roles or any of that. This is about the idea of taking on these energies. Sometimes you got to go after it and chase it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you got to sit back and manifest it. Sometimes you got to let it come to you. And so this is how you are resilient.
This is beautiful. I believe this is the highlight of our conversation here today. I thought our conversation was going to be all about substances and things that you take physically, but there's a whole lot of the mind factor, the environment and the thinking and so many other things that came into it. And I love that. But this last thing that you just mentioned about the balance part and not being the wounded puma. There's no glory in that. That's a great metaphor there because, you know, from my experience, Sean, what I believe in is when we are wounded, we find sort of some kind of solace in wounding other people unknowingly, subconsciously. We wound others in order for us to feel better, and we spread it and we bring that toxicity into the environment.
Yeah, it's the idea of hurt people. Okay. It's very much the case. We project ourselves out on other people. If you feel love inside, you see the best in everyone and you project that love out. If you're hurting inside, you see the sadness and pain in everyone else and you hate people and exactly, that's exactly it. Hurt people.
Well, thank you. It's been a lovely conversation. We have loads more to ask you, but we'll keep that for the next episode at some stage. And so have a great time in China where you are right now. I believe keep inventing, finding those wonderful ingredients that uplift and, superpower humanity. We need it in an age where we are now competing with machines and algorithms. We need these ingredients to find out what's the best mindset and what are the best substances we can use in order to perform at our peak. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Sean.
Thank you for having me on. I'm excited to come back. I got a lot more.
Yes, and so do we. So look forward to it. Till then, take care and keep inventing new ingredients. We'll share the links for Sean's book in the comments section, as well as the couple of ingredients that he mentioned that I personally am looking forward to, and we'll share all of those in the description as well as the comments down below. Take care, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.